Chapter 11.
We are here,
said Zortfern, raising a hand to gesture dismissively to the surrounding trees. At first, Lurien wondered if the branch wraith was again being loose with her concept of distance, for there was nothing to differentiate where they were from the path that had come before it. The trees loomed as close and high as ever, the air beneath their tangled canopies trapped and thick with cloying odours. With a weary sigh, he looked up, hoping to surprise himself. The fortress arbour of Dwy Hor had been a brooding hulk of silver-grey bark, as massive and ancient as any living being in the deeper oceans of the Green Gulch. Its gargantuan trunk had been blistered with tumescent growths, which served the Idoneth as dwellings, and gleamed with the amber panes of windows. Its branches, meanwhile, had been ingrown to form terraces and gardens, where the malevolent flicker of deep spites wove about the claws of its leafless crown. He'd been expecting something similar here. The stately elder sister, perhaps, the Lagithe to its Larame. But there was nothing, just more forest. The one indication Lurien was given that they had in fact arrived somewhere came a few moments later. A small kin group of dryads stepped out of a root thicket ahead of them. The undergrowth rustled with their passage, not because the forest folk were incapable of moving silently should they wish it, but rather because they explicitly did not wish it. The forest itself was as much a part of this welcome as the Silverneth. Swordfern and her kin band moved ahead of the Idoneth, and the two groups of Silverneth came together. Dryads ran their talons over their sister's bark, murmuring in the creaking timbre of the sylvan tongue, a language far less alien to Lurien than the physical syntax that seemed to complement it. A dryad's touch lingered on the torn bark on the Swordfern's chest. The branch wraith emitted a grieving song, like that of wind-wearied branches, and the dryad seemed to diminish in her embrace. A mournful note entered the life song of the glade. Until that point, Lurien had almost stopped listening to it, in much the same way that one who lived all his life by the ocean did not need to marvel each day at its splendour. But the sudden dissonance in the rhythm made him hark to it anew. It was a new verse to a cyclically unchanging song, a melody of mourning and grief, for enemies unslain and lives cut down before their prime. Lurien felt an unwelcome sting in his eyes, and unconsciously wiped away a tear. He stared at his glistening fingertip in dismay, then looked up to find Eodrain similarly afflicted.
"My eyes," said the Achillean. "I think they're bleeding."
Lurien rubbed the moisture between forefinger and thumb, then tasted it on the tip of his tongue. "Salt water?"
"They call the ocean from our eyes."
Eodrain pulled his collar even further out of shape to wipe the streaming liquid from his cheeks.
"What tree witchery is this?"
Lurien looked up to see that the rest of his small army suffered as he and his retainer did. Felinduil sobbed quietly in his sickly half-sleep. Only the eyeless Namatai seemed to be spared the strange tears. Nevertheless, a few of those shuddered as they struggled to contain the alien emotions, and Namariel, he noted, was amongst them. The woman had shown herself to be unusually sensitive to mood-altering magics, and she stood now with arms crossed over her breast, chest practically heaving with a forest's grief. He longed to go to her, to comfort her in some way he knew not how, but even Venom had been afflicted by the air of melancholy and refused to move despite Lurien's direst threats.
"Weep not, daughters of Alariel,"
rumbled Quathor, his unhurried stride bearing him easily beyond the grieving dryads. The shield warden of the Queen's Wood walked with his weapon drawn, not because there was some threat he feared here in the Quethene hearthglades, but because he wore no accoutrement on his gnarled trunk in which to sheathe it. The long spear blade rippled like quicksilver, the elf runes fixed within its fluid form sparking fitfully in the forested twilight. The occasional forest spite braved its killing halo to play amidst the sparks, the spirits gaily shifting in form and colour as they orbited the ancient tree lord and his mighty blade.
I remember when this realm was not but endless marsh,
he groaned.
Nothing grew here then. Nothing but the flies and grubs of Nurgle, gifts to capture the heart of the Radiant Queen. Now it is green. The seeds of your sisters will not know such a world again.
Swordfern straightened, pushing her sister from her embrace.
Small comfort, Warden.
Only because you know no better.
It would ease their spirits better to know that we have driven the worms of Coryza into the ground.
Lurien glanced at the branch wraith, then turned back to Kuathor. Why have you not?
We will,
said Kuathor.
When the season comes.
Coryza's strength waxes again, said Lurien. Even in the courts of the Deepkin we speak of it, and it is dire tidings indeed that interest my people enough to discuss. I have raided the Gulch Empress's city myself. Swordfern looked at him in surprise. He pretended not to see. I have seen for myself how her power has grown. Kuathor emitted a long groan, the sound of deep strength and infinite patience.
Short are the lives of elves. Shorter yet those of the Deepkin. You speak of things you cannot know. You cannot know how mighty Carivinia once was, how every tree in Gairan once trembled to her footstep.
All the more reason to strike at her now,
Swordfern hissed,
while she is still weak. We should make common cause with the Deepkin enclaves on our borders and wipe her from our lady's realm.
Lurien had been waiting for such a request, implicit or otherwise. He affixed his least bloodless smile and bowed his head to the branch wraith. Once I am crowned king of Briamdar, you could, of course, count on my fullest support. The branch wraith nodded her gratitude, too frustrated to answer in kind.
We will strike,
said Kuathor, his tone measured and unchanged.
When the season comes.
And when will it come? Lurien asked.
When it comes.
Without a further word, the tree lord strode on, the tremors of his footsteps bringing yellow leaves and ripened fruits falling from the branches overhead. Uriel bent to pick one from the ground. He turned it over in his big hand before taking a bite from its dark red flesh. He turned to Lurien, juice running down the sides of his face, and nodded. "We're not here for the food," said Lurien.
"It's delicious, my prince."
"I should think so," said Eodren. "I've known Arkelian lords who would trade 1,000 souls for a single bushel of Quetanae fruit."
"In that case, stop eating them and gather as many as you can." Lurien pointed to the fruit lying untended on the ground. "We will sell them in the markets of Gwethan. If anyone has 1,000 souls to spare, it's Galra here." He kicked his spurs into Venom's flanks. The Fangmore was startled, but at least now consented to move, eeling forwards with Eodren and his mount close on his tail. Swordfern appeared to be waiting for him. The branch wraith and her sisters milled in the middle of the trail, as if some potent summons drew on them, only to find the dryads loath to hasten their sister's grief song, even for a spirit as venerable as Kuathor clearly was.
"I appreciate your words, Prince Lurien," said Swordfern as he rode near. It reassures me to know that I am not alone in thinking them. It makes me think I am not mad.
The dryad straightened to her full swaying height, branch-like antlers and long claws willowing in a gesture of uncertainty.
But it is not for me to speak of such things. It is neither the place nor the season.
Follow,
Quathor intoned. The ancient's huge stride had already carried him some distance into the trees, and at the rumbling timbre of his voice, the dryads stiffened as though they were powerless to disobey. From what Lurien knew of the Sylvaneth, that was probably the case. Namariel swam up behind Lurien as the Idoneth's column slowed to accommodate the forest folk. The long-heeled skin that covered her eyes was a purple-blue, lines spidering through the cold beauty that surrounded them.
"I saw what you tried to do," she said.
Lurien smiled. It was almost too easy.
"The Ever-Queen herself weeps over these glades," she said. "And you would take advantage."
"To make myself king and you a queen, I'd gladly tell an enemy what she most wanted to hear. What's wrong with you?"
"Even before the grief of the gods, you know no shame."
"Ignorance is bliss."
"A lesson I somehow doubt Teclis passed down to the Kaithai."
Lurien grinned. "I suspect there was quite a lot he kept to himself, my love."
"Would a prince make his betrothed walk while he rode?"
She presented her hand. Lurien squirmed in the saddle before finally laying his fingertips across hers. Their chaste and fleeting contact sent a flame of passion along his fingers. At the same time, he tensed, half expecting the Namatai to pull him from the saddle for the amusement of the Reavers and Sylvaneth alike. But as she and Lurien hooked fingertips and she climbed gracefully into the saddle in front of him, he realized that he knew her better than that. A revenge as petty and fleeting as that was beneath her.
"My prince is gracious," she said,
and then,
"Well, what are you waiting for?"
Lurien kicked his heel into Venom's ribs, and with one hand, the other hovering chastely over Namariel's shoulder, jigged the reins after the tail of Eodrain's beast. The Fangmora hissed, but the hard regime of the Turach Embalers had left her with no outlet for her annoyance, but obedience. After a moment's resistance, she moved. Tree after tree dragged by, almost hypnotic in their regularity and sameness. They called to mind the meditation exercises in which Lagithe had attempted to instruct him, and with which Namariel had, if only briefly, been genuinely impressed. He muttered a few half-hearted mantras, but what came easily in the crushing depths of Briomdar took more effort than he was accustomed to giving here. Sensation was everywhere, emotion never far beneath the surface. The air was too stiflingly hot. Namariel, a discomforting and distracting presence in his lap. The patient wail song of the trees, an unnerving pressure against his ears, a nagging constant in his soul. Even those trees, for all their interchangeability, had unique qualities that became apparent when one's mind was starved of stimulation elsewhere. The girth of the trunks, the colour and age of the mosses and ivy that grew on them, the spread of their branches. As his focus deepened, he realised that while there remained no evidence of cultivation or habitation as an Idoneth would recognise it, he could hear a difference in the life song. A chorus of contralto singers had joined the bass ensemble. The collective sound brought Lurien out in goosebumps, though his accursed soul had no way of understanding its meaning. On sensing that change, he began to see it, as the scales of his own mental creation had been drawn from his eyes. Individual dryads emerged from curtains of undergrowth or crouched on the ends of branches to sing their part of the greeting before being absorbed back into the forest, their numbers impossible to gauge. Lurien redoubled his attempts to spy any sign of Sylvaneth dwellings, but again found nothing. He wondered if he had underestimated the differences between his people and his hosts. They were, in essence, sentient trees, or spirits thereof, sap and heartwood encased in silvery bark. Did they need shelter or rest? Perhaps they lived free in the forest like the spites, answering only to the seasons, as the Idoneth answered to the tides. Realizing that his efforts at meditation had been more effective than he had expected, Lurien blinked himself back to a more immediate point of focus. He looked up to the towering form of Kuathor, the tree lord ancient, continuing to lead them deeper into the Kwethene hearth glades, his spear blazing like a beacon lamp for every moth-like spite and timeless sentience within 100 leagues. "I wonder how old he is," Lurien mused.
"Who?"
said Namariel after a time, pointedly observing their silence a moment longer. "The tree lord, Kuathor." Namariel looked ahead to where the ancient strode, disturbing the lower branches over the trail with his height.
"I know you well enough to know that you have no interest in Kuathor or his age."
"Well, you are mistaken. He interests me a great deal."
"Why?"
"Don't tell me you've failed to notice the spear he carries."
"Eslikar, yes, I have noticed."
"Kuathor, rather, seems to have made it his own. What are the chances, do you think, that he would surrender a weapon like that for one outcast dryad?" Namariel turned in the saddle until she was facing him.
"Whatever you are thinking, forget it. Whatever madness Marpor suffers with, he seems to like you. You are this close to receiving the blessing of Dwi Hor. Don't ruin that now because things look difficult."
"I didn't say I was thinking of giving up, did I?"
"Follow Marbor's instruction and see where it leads us. The last time you decided to be impulsive, you led us to Coriza."
"An expedition whose benefits outweighed its costs."
"Elgaen and a pet tide caster in exchange for one dead prince."
Lurien shifted uncomfortably. "I wouldn't put it exactly like that."
"Well, hopefully we will not need to resort to such measures to earn Dwi Hor's allegiance, because in case it has escaped your notice..."
She gave Lurien's shoulder a push to emphasize her meaning.
"We are down to our last prince."
"I'm not being impulsive, I'm thinking." Namariel snorted and turned back around. Ahead of them, Kuathor came to a lurching stop. The forest folk slowed. Bidding the elves in their charge to tread ether seas, the tree lord spread his arms to the forest and issued a juddering groan. It was the sound of a horn 18 feet in height and carved from living timbers, the sound a mighty oak might make if hands existed that were powerful enough to wring the air from its bark. The cry was still echoing from the forest when the trees flanking them began to thrash and sway, appearing for all the world to bow their canopies as first one, then two, then three great tree lords of the Kwethene strode to Kuathor's side. It was as though all had converged on this inauspicious place at this specific time by chance. Simply by their own presence, the noble spirits transformed the innocuous glade into an arena for an assembral, or a moot, as the Sylvaneth referred to a meeting of their elders. Lurien looked up as, despite the whispered assurances of Swordfern and her sisters, the Namatai Reavers drew nervously back from the gathering giants. Like the trees themselves, Lurien could see that the tree lords, while similar at a glance, were each different. One was tall and willowy, its knotholes narrow and set stupendously high, so it was forced to squint down at elves and Sylvaneth alike. Another was thicker of trunk, branch arms stiff, its bark encrusted with the hard shell-like growths of lichens. The third stood somewhere between the two, its heartwood mottled with the scar tissue of old diseases, one knothole scratched, the bark down one side of its girth blackened as though by fire. Lurien felt that the last lord must hail from the lands bordering the plague kingdoms of Coriza. All were mighty, and yet none quite rivaled the imperiousness of Quathor. It was clear that these spirits of the forest possessed a hierarchy, and the shield warden of the Queen's Wood was at its top. Quathor strode between those lesser tree lords, who bent at the approximate position of knees as the ancient raised his spear, turned it point down, and plunged it into the stump of a long-felled tree. Light blazed from the stricken stump, rinsing every scrap of shadow from the forest glade, and bringing despairing cries from the Ideneth, who had long since forsaken the light of their maker. Eodren fell from the saddle as though punched by a lance, rolling on the ground and covering his eyes. Even Filenduil was roused from his torpor to scream. Lurien buried his face in the material of Namariel's cloak, colour bursts of visual pain crashing against his eyelids like a tidal wave from the white oceans of Leiriu. "The power of the kings and queens that spear holds," Lurien cried. "It is incredible!"
"I do not understand," said Namariel. "I see nothing."
Lurien did not reply, but the pain in his eyes brought a quiet satisfaction that the dead spoke to him for a change and not to her. The Kaithai reserved their greatest revelations for their true-souled children, and, as though faced with a puzzle whose solution had become clear, all again seemed right with the realms. The radiance sank back into the forest, drawn in through roots and stoma, a dewy portion remaining to glimmer from leaves and grey bark, and from the heartwood of the Sylvaneth, who now encircled the glade. Quathor stomped slowly back the way he had come. Eslikai, a single point of brilliance, half buried in the dead wood of the stump. Blinking the spots from his eyes, Lurien forced his gaze away from it as the Tree Lord Ancient came to stand before him.
"Come, guests from the Green Ocean," said Quathor,
gesturing hither with crooked talons the length of Lurien's hellsaber.
"Come, foes who may in time yet become friends. Come forwards."
Lurien shared a look with Eodren, and the now startlingly lucid Filenduil, then took a deep breath and reluctantly swam ahead. He was unfamiliar with the Kwethene clan's customs, but he lowered himself to one knee. The tree lords grumbled amongst themselves, apparently approving.
"You have come for the weapon for Mabhor," said Quathor.
"In exchange for your lost daughter," said Lurien, head bowed.
"She is no daughter of ours,"
said the disease-scarred spirit, in a voice like cracking nuts.
"She is the child of the deep grove,"
said another.
"Taken from our nursery groves as a soul pod,"
said the third.
"But her heartwood is Kwethene,"
said Quathor, and then to Lurien,
"And yet Mabhor's crime is not one lightly forgiven. It is not to be rewarded, nor undone with the return of his great weapon."
"The sea has only been peaceful since it was taken,"
one argued.
"The Everqueen demands the conquest of Dwehor,"
growled the Corizon spirit. Lurien thought back to the beach where he and Swordfern's folk had come ashore. The great mass of greenery, threatening to overspill the coastline and claim the sea. If the Radiant Queen gained a foothold in Dwi-Hor, would she ever be removed? Would she be content with her forest enclave in the shallows, or would she spread until the hidden floor of her realm was green with the same life that enveloped its continents? Alariel, Archaon, Nagash. Could the Eidoneth ever be truly hidden again? With a shrug, Lurien decided that these were wars for distant heirs and elves with crowns already on their heads, and lifted his gaze to meet Quathor's knotholes. "I am not Ma'por," he said. "Can we not begin on that basis?" A gruff shudder of sylvan speak passed between the gathered tree lords. It went on for several minutes before a wave of Quathor's huge hand sent a shiver through the watching folk.
"Good,"
said Quathor.
"Good. Good."
Silver-barked dryads carrying bronze trays laden with fruits and nuts and tall ewers of wine walked into the glade. They spread out amongst the Eidoneth, offering repast. Ureil took one of the abundant red-skinned fruits in each hand. A spindle-limbed dryad with a smattering of coppery leaves passed Lurien the cup and filled it with sweet-smelling wine. Despite the creature's hag-like features and stiff-bodied movements, he was unpleasantly reminded of the Namatai conch girl that had waited on him at his coronation assembly. He looked down, strangely embarrassed by his own past self. The cup in his hands had been shaped from the seed coat of a large nut. An amber liquid half filled it, scattered with red and yellow seeds.
"The Duardin clans of the Duarfold taught us the brewing of Naluka,"
said Quathor.
"In exchange for knowledge of the spirit paths to the sea. Many, many hundreds of years ago now, before the coming of Chaos and the rise of Coryza, when the Duarfold still lived, and when they were friends across the sea with whom to trade."
The Tree Lord issued a deep, grieving sigh.
"How long has it been since a cask of Duarfold was uncorked for a guest?"
"Almost 90 years,
said the willow-tall tree lord, and then, after a long pause, added,
"Ma'bor."
The other three tree lords, Quathor included, grumbled in discontent. Lurien smiled stickily, keen to intercept this change of mood. He swirled the sweet Naluka in his cup. "What, then, is this for, noble lords? A toast? A libation to each other's gods?"
"It is for drinking, Prince Lurien,"
said Quathor. "I am honoured."
"Long has it been the custom of the Kuethene, when welcoming a new friend. It is the first offering, a token of trust, the soil in which green shoots may prosper."
Lurien glanced down at the syrupy liquid in his cup. "Perhaps my dear friend Eodren would care to join me in a cup." He waved again for the dryad who had served him.
"I would not want to rob you of the honour, my prince,"
the Archelian called back, keeping his arms firmly crossed over his chest.
"But drink the damned drink,"
Namariel hissed behind him. Lurien deflated. "Vomiting over the elder grove of the Kuethene doesn't seem very diplomatic," he whispered back.
"Just do it."
With a grimace, Lurien lifted the cup in toast to Quathor and his fellow tree lords, then brought it to his lips.
Forcing his throat to unclench, he threw the cup's contents into his mouth. He gagged. It was sticky and mind-blastingly sweet, infused with a dozen floral odours that assailed his senses at once. It was as though he were attempting to swallow a distillate of springtime. He made himself swallow, coughing wretchedly as he looked up, only to choke in astonishment as Quator split in two. He blinked. The two tree lords blurred as they drifted apart. Well? He turned towards Namariel, but fell sideways the moment his balance shifted. The cries of Uriel and Eodrain sounded like the roar of a distant sea as they crashed over his head and swept him to oblivion.